Hello, this is Deborah on Kelso, host of this edition of Nature Now for the first week of August. This week, we are very happy to have for you part two of the conversation that we started with biologist extraordinaire Jeff Hammerson last week, talking about the woodpeckers of the Olympic Peninsula. Welcome, Jeff.
Well, happy to be back.
Oh, we're happy to have you back. Last week, we got so wrapped up in current natural history events, we had such fun talking about all the cool stuff that's going on that we didn't really talk very much about woodpeckers. So,
right, so for the past week, we didn't go outside at all.
I'm reluctant to crack open that door, but is there something that you'd like to say that we haven't said about cool stuff that's going on out there?
I think we should actually move on to woodpeckers.
Okay. Well, anyway, there's a lot to say about woodpeckers because they are really remarkable. And what some people don't realize is that what remarkable keystone species they are. In preparing for the show, I spent some time with Paul Banick's wonderful book, The Owl and the Woodpecker. He's a marvelous photographer, and he's a really good writer, too. And he was talking about how important woodpeckers are to other species, especially to some of the small owls, that over half of the owl species in North America rely upon woodpeckers for their nesting cavities, and almost a third of all our forest vertebrate species nest or roost in cavities, and many of these are created by woodpeckers, too.
Yeah, I mean, you'd want to sort of list them, but there's so many you can't list them. But things like flying squirrels, bluebirds, and I'm pretty sure that Pacific tree frogs use those as refuges if they're not occupied by woodpecker at the time. But who knows? Maybe they cohabitate. Nobody really knows. Many kinds of animals use those for sure. And as we mentioned last time, some of the trees that the woodpeckers use, you might not think of being a valuable tree like some of the willows around here that they live 30 or 40 years and they kind of, many of them just kind of die and then fall over. But in that period of time toward the end of their lives, when they're starting to decay, they have so many woodpeckers drilling into them and creating cavities, so they become valuable places. Of course, many other trees as well, but just putting in a word for the willow.
You know, I've been astonished. You know, a lot of people think of willow as a garbage tree. It's like, not good wood to burn, you know. But on my property, it is one of the most valuable trees. I mean, both for nesting and feeding, because it decays. And it seems like the leaves attract a lot of insects. You always see the birds gleaning underneath the leaves and combing through the trees. And so I have gained a lot of respect for our native willow.
Yeah. Woodpeckers certainly make use of them in abundance.
So. Yes, indeed. Another cool thing about woodpeckers is like their extraordinary physiology, right? I mean, how rigid their skull is to withstand all that hammering and the extraordinary tongue that winds around the inside of their skull.
Yeah, so everyone wonders about the drumming and the pecking and why woodpeckers don't suffer concussions and brain injuries. And, you know, there's been a lot of micro anatomical studies of woodpecker skulls, and there's some little features like spongy bone or the fact that their brain is really tightly packed into the skull. It doesn't, there's not much space around it.
Not much rattle space
inside
there.
Not much room to slosh around. And those things certainly help with the shock absorbing qualities. But it turns out that a lot of the shock of impact, the energy there, goes into the tree to begin with. So we forget about that when they peck into the tree, things go flying or sound is made, and that's where some of the energy goes. And there was a recent study published that showed that 99% of the energy of impact moves down the neck and into the body and doesn't go to the brain at all. So when you look at a woodpecker skull and so forth, you really don't see any overt adaptations to being pounded against an object. And the reason is because a lot of that energy is dissipated in other places. So it's really not an issue for them to begin with, although it seems like it should be. They do hit at speeds of up to about 16 miles an hour when they hit their... People have measured this.
Wow.
So if you measure the speed of the bird's head as it goes toward the wood of a tree trunk, let's say, it goes up to maybe 15, 16 miles an hour. And of course, it's really not that fast when you think about it. We can move our hands over 100 miles an hour.
Huh.
At least some people can. I don't think I can. You know, and so we kind of like, oh, well, it looks so fast when a woodpecker, especially when it's drumming, but it's not quite as fast as you would think. And a woodpecker's head is also quite light, and the duration of the impact is very short. So they get around the problem of the stress of impact by really not having it move into the brain at all, but to other parts of the body or into the wood.
Cool. Well, I was really excited when we were looking at my downy nest and you took all those great photos. For the first time, I saw the tongue come out, the little thread-like tongue. I mean, they've got these amazingly long, sticky tongues, right? And so they can, like, go in and get insects out.
It's amazing.
They look like little teeny worms. I mean, they're just, until you see them, you just can't really grasp it. I was just astonished.
Yeah, they can protrude the tongue like in a flicker a couple of inches beyond the end of the bill, which is really a long way. And all woodpeckers can extrude their tongue a long distance. And they use it in different ways, of course. Like some of them will stick their tongue down in an insect tunnel. And the tongue is not only thin and sticky, but also has backward-facing barbs on it. And so if there's a little
fishing hook.
Yeah, you know. a little insect in that tunnel, and the woodpecker feels it, it can just yank it out with its barbed tongue tip and pull it right back into its mouth. And then something like a sapsucker, which we may talk about a little bit later, the tip of their tongue is like a little brush. And so it's good for lapping up tree sap. And then something like a flicker, which is a kind of woodpecker that you see on the ground a lot, feeding on ants. Their tongue is not so much, I don't think it has any barbs on it whatsoever, but it's super sticky. And so that they can pick up ant larvae, eggs, and adults really quickly.
They just lay it down.
Just swipe it across there and pull in a whole bunch of food items on their sticky tongues.
Wow, cool.
But the reason that they can stick their tongue out so far is not only because it's long, but the base of their tongue. You know, we have a bone at the base of our tongue called the hyoid bone, and so do woodpeckers. But theirs is really elaborate, and it has extensions on it that curve not only into the throat, but around the back of the skull and around the front toward the eyes. They have muscles attached with that long extensions on the tongue base that allow them to pull that whole apparatus downward and forward and push that tongue way out into the tunnels.
I've seen little illustrations, and it's quite remarkable. Woodpeckers are really cool, and we should go on to play another mystery sound, I think. It's a species that's very similar. We talked about the downy woodpecker last time, but we are going to talk about the hairy.
Okay, let's start with some single call notes. Okay, so that's a hairy woodpecker, and those notes are sort of similar to the single notes of the downy woodpecker that we heard.
And we should probably explain that hairy woodpeckers and downy woodpeckers look a lot alike. I mean, they're the same genus. Hairy woodpeckers are about 3 inches longer. They're about the size of a robin.
They kind of look like downy woodpeckers on steroids.
Yeah, that's right. And and the thing to notice, too, is the bill. The bill is way more stout on a hairy. And I think the rule of thumb is that a hairy's bill is longer than the size of the head. And a downy woodpecker has a bill that's a lot more delicate and smaller than the size of the head.
If you look closely at enough of actually both species, you'll see that there's a lot of variation actually in the bill length, but the downy tends to be much shorter and the hairy longer. But I've looked at a lot of photos and I've looked at a lot of woodpeckers, and it's like, there's a lot of variation in the bill length.
I know.
Isn't talked about in the field guides so
yeah.
much. Yeah. So the call that we just listened to is a lot like the downy's call, but more strident. And maybe, again, difficult to hear in a recording out of context from what it sounds like in the forest, but much more strident single call. And then they have another call that we can listen to that you can often hear in the forest.
So their whinny is quite a bit different than the downy's. The downy's is a lot higher. That's more like a trill rather than a whinny.
Yeah, it's more of a steady pitch to it.
Yep.
And it almost sounds like a kingfisher in certain in certain ways.
Uh-huh.
And it's loud. It travels through the forest pretty long distances. And I think the males and females stay in touch with each other using that, as well as the single calls.
And the males and females look a lot alike, except that the male, if you look carefully, has a red spot on the back of the head with both the downies and the hairies.
Yeah, they're two very similar looking species, as you mentioned, pretty much just size differences.
Uh-huh. And their habitat use is a little bit different, isn't it? Don't the hairies tend to like more of a coniferous component in the landscape?
Yeah, more mature forest often with bigger trees and more of a coniferous component, as you said. And the downies can be found in the same places, but younger forests, smaller trees, more deciduous would be on average where you might find more downies.
And they're so much smaller that they can sometimes you don't know if it is a woodpecker. It'll be kind of acrobatic and hanging on.
Yeah, they're tiny. They don't stand out as a woodpecker shape so much.
Yeah, they're not rigid on the bark, moving up the tree the way a traditional, they do that, but they do other types of foraging behavior also.
Yeah, let's listen to a hairy drumming.
Oh, that's cool.
If you listen to it carefully and compare it to a downy, the drumming is faster than the downy's. The number of notes per unit of time is faster. But in the field, when you're just hearing one, it's difficult to make that distinction. It turns out, too, that flicker drumming overlaps with both of these species. So it can be confusing. If you're just hearing that sort of kind of even drumming and you're out there and somebody will turn and you say, "What was that?" It was either a downy, a hairy, or a flicker. So it can be a little confusing to distinguish them. But if you can hear, like I say, downy and hairy very close to each other in time, you can pick up, our ears aren't as good as bird ears in rapidly emitted sounds and distinguishing them, but the birds have no trouble with it. So a downy and a hairy woodpecker know each other's calls or their drums quite easily, but for us it's a little more difficult.
Maybe we should move on to hear the flicker then.
Yeah, so the northern flicker is a large woodpecker that occurs around here. It used to be called the red-shafted flicker, but was lumped with the yellow-shafted flicker that occurs in the east. So it's an unusual woodpecker in that they don't feed on trees, perched on trees very much at all. You might see them perched in a tree, often just vocalizing or hanging out looking around. But when they're seriously feeding, they go to the ground mostly and eat ants, ant larvae, ant eggs. They're ant specialists and mostly ground feeders. So it's a really different kind of woodpecker. And it's called a flicker, but it's truly a woodpecker. And let's listen to one of their calls.
And they're the most common woodpecker in North America.
True,
types
of downies and hairies, too. They're both, coast to coast.
Uh-huh.
So, all three of those are quite widespread.
Unlike some of the other sounds that can be muted, they usually are calling from the top of a tree, it seems to me, and they are loud. And then they have that really distinctive undulating flight where they, and all woodpeckers do, but you especially notice it with flickers because they're so large and they have a really exaggerated motion of closing their wings and swooping, and then they have that white rump to the base of their tail.
Yeah, that helps identify them when they fly up off the ground. Maybe you're walking or riding your bicycle or driving your car and you see this bird come up off the ground and make that undulating flight and that bright white rump, and then you see the flash of the red in the wings. That's a good way of identifying them.
And they're so elegant. They're just really handsome. You're about to do one of my favorite calls.
Well, we'll see if it is. This is what biologists call the long call.
I do really like that call, but I've heard it really exaggerated to that waka waka call that they do.
Sometimes the call we just listened to is faster, so the pace is slower or faster depending on some sort of psychological state of the bird, I suppose. And then of course they drum as well, and flickers, like especially flickers, I would say, but other woodpeckers too, sometimes choose objects other than wood, like rain gutters and things like that, to drum on, and whatever resonates.
Or your chimney in the spring.
Let's listen to a flicker drumming.
Oh, cool.
So you can hear that quite similar to the hairy woodpecker and downy woodpecker. And some people actually think that it is so similar to those other species that possibly one reason for the evolution of the long call, that kuk, 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 that we just listened to previously, might be that the woodpeckers evolved that call and found it to be more effective than drumming in communicating with their own species.
And that's interesting.
If you look at the acoustic qualities of the drumming of, let's say, hairy downy and flicker, even on a very technical level of sound analysis, they're hard to distinguish. Huh. So, anyway, kind of interesting.
Yeah, thing. It is. We should talk about sapsuckers because they're so unusual. I mean, they get their name from their foraging strategy. And even when we can't see the sapsucker, we can tell where they've been because they have those distinctive little holes in a very uniform line along the bark of a tree.
Yeah, so the local species is the red-breasted sapsucker. And its head is all red and its breast is red. Quite impressive bird. And as you said, they consume sap as a regular part of their diet. And they should be called sap lappers because they don't actually suck the sap. They lap it up with their tongue. So.
Well, and they also, what I didn't realize when I first heard about them is that, you know, they're getting the benefit of all the insects that are attracted to that sap too. So they get the sap and then they get all these really good protein bits that come to the sap.
Yeah, and I read this recent study where they observed that red-breasted sapsuckers sometimes will take an insect and dip it in the sap before they feed it to their youngsters. So they kind of get the sugar and the protein together. So a well-rounded diet, I suppose. But yeah, so they create these wells, sap wells. Sometimes they're just round little tiny holes in rows, as you mentioned. Sometimes they enlarge them into little like rectangular patches, and those will be in rows as well. And that can be in many different kinds of trees. You can see those in western red cedars. You can see them in non-native holly trees around here, and pretty much anything in between, but they defend those as a food source, and they come back to them time and time again. And so if there is a pair of sapsuckers that has some well trees scattered in their territory, if other sapsuckers come in to try to use them, they'll chase them away. But some of the other birds do make use of them. For example, the rufous hummingbirds that are nectar feeders will also consume the sap from sapsucker wells in tree trunks.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I don't see them enough at my place. I think that it's the forest canopy maybe is a little bit too dense for them. They like it to be a little more open, usually.
Yeah, it's hard to figure out. I've seen them in mostly partly open contexts, but it's hard to be sure exactly what they're attracted to. I think they're really attracted to trees that produce sap well for them.
Yeah.
And so that might be various kinds of situations depending on the forest type. In a natural forest, like you go over to the West Side Forest, the Ho River Valley, they're up in there, and you know that's kind of a semi-open forest because of the big old trees that have fallen down and so forth. But then sometimes you see them in pretty dense situations, but usually that's, as you said, somewhat open.
We have to get to the pileated woodpecker.
We want to listen.
We definitely want to listen to the red-breasted sapsucker.
Because we pointed out the difficulty of distinguishing the drumming of those three woodpeckers we already discussed, but listen to this.
Isn't it so nice when something is really distinctive and you can go, oh, that sounds unique. I know what that is.
That one you can yell out, sapsucker.
Yeah.
And be certain of it because there's none of the other woodpeckers in this area that sound like that. Other sapsuckers, let's say like Williamson sapsucker that you can see over in the Cascades, sounds similar, has it that irregular rhythm, but a really distinctive drum call.
So pileateds are now our largest woodpecker in North America, right? Pileateds are very magnificent in their own right.
They are. So as you said, our biggest one, and let's say a downy woodpecker is a little over 6 inches long, and a pileated woodpecker is a little over 16 inches long.
They're pretty darn impressive when you see them flying through.
Yeah, a downy's wingspan is only 12 inches. Seems pretty big for a little bird, but the pileated is more like 29 inches.
Wow.
So it's a much bigger bird, and it weighs 11 times. You'd have to have 11 downy woodpeckers on your scale to counterbalance a pileated woodpecker.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that dramatic a difference.
Yeah.
They also make really unique and wonderful sounds.
Yeah, let's listen to a pileated calling.
Chicken of the woods.
Yeah, so a loud call, usually pretty irregular in its rhythm. The male and female stay together on their territories pretty much throughout the year. Might drift around a little bit in the winter, and they'll communicate in that way with each other. And they also drum, of course. And let's listen to their drumming sound.
That's impressive.
Not as impressive in the recording as when you're out in the forest and a big pileated has got itself a nice hollow tree and it's rapping on that thing. And that sound really, really travels. And it kind of trails off at the end a little bit. And the drumming cadence is a little slower than the others. You're almost tempted to think you could count the number of beats when they're drumming. You can't quite do it, but if you think you might be able to, if you really paid attention, it's probably a pileated because it's a little slower cadence.
And you know, something that is confusing to a lot of people is that, you know, their nesting cavity, they make these giant, talk about a keystone species in the landscape. Mm. They make these really large cavities that a lot of different animals can use.
Like wood ducks, for example.
Yeah, like wood ducks.
Yeah, they could fit in there.
And you know, a whole bunch of the nest cavity using
Bigger, the ones that are bigger can use use those big pileated cavities.
When they do make a feeding cavity, it's rectangular. And people go, why do they do that? But their nesting cavities are still round.
Yeah. So the opening is pretty much circular when they've made a nesting cavity. And as you mentioned, a more rectangular, elongate opening when they're feeding. Kind of squared corners to it. It's pretty recognizable. And when they find a nest of carpenter ants or a tree that has a lot of wood-boring beetle larvae in it, those are their main foods, those two things, they'll just rip the whole side of the tree off, basically. You know, the tree's pretty well rotted usually. And when they get working on that, and sometimes I've seen a pair of them, like on a rotting red alder,
just
and the wood
hammering
is just flying off, and it's like crashing to the ground at the bottom of the tree. But they'll just tear open that whole side and just feast on the ants or beetle larvae that are inside.
Yeah, they're wonderful to behold, and we're very lucky to have so many of them in our area. We've also got some other species that we don't have time to mention here, but they're rare. They're generally east side woodpeckers that come drifting over, attracted by burned areas or fires sometimes.
Yeah, or insect outbreaks.
Yep.
But it's really cool that the five species we've talked about, you can see those all around here in Port Townsend. In fact, you could see all five of them in one day.
I know.
Which is really kind of fun.
We're very lucky. And we could come back for part three on woodpeckers, but for right now, we have to say goodbye. So thanks so much for joining us.
Well, we'll thank the woodpeckers for making it so fun to talk about.
I know. Well, we'd like to thank Jeff and our sound engineer and recorder, Nora Petrich, and to all of you for listening. And our closing music is Zumbelly by the Woodpeckers. As always, wishing you happy trails.
You not see me auntie me rich. You not see me booty me rich. You not see me uncle me rich. But I know licking a wood ya stick. Lord, I know Zumbele. I know Zumbele. I know Zumbele. I know Zumbele. Auntie Martha come to town. Figure by one white, white gown. You be see the people, them a jump round. Figure see Auntie Martha white gown. Lord, I know Zumbele. See me.